This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, episode 14. Dr. Rob, all I can say is, oh my God. As I was driving to Des Moines on Saturday, getting ready for the Iowa-Penn State game, catching up on the Nebraska-Illinois game, and all I could think was, oh my God, the state must be going crazy. And it was literally going crazy.
I'm not sure I was that surprised. And the reason I say that is you look at some of the other games Illinois has played. Now, again, they're not a great team, but obviously neither is Nebraska. But they had kind of a nice come from behind win over Rutgers with their backup quarterback.
Rutgers, Doc. Rutgers.
I get it, but here's the thing. I think people kind of need to start worrying about Rutgers a little bit, because Greg Schiano Rutgers is different than non-Greg Schiano Rutgers. That's two different Rutgers here. So when Greg Schiano was there, people need to kind of hit the reset button, jump back 10 years ago, when Rutgers was going out and knocking people off left and right, and the whole chopping wood thing, or keep on chopping, whatever his axe lumberjack mantra was. They were beating people, and Rutgers was a very solid football team. There's a reason NFL teams came knocking on Greg's door. He's back there now, and I guarantee you he's going to do fairly well there. I mean, he's basically Rutgers' Pat Fitzgerald, except I think he's a little bit better recruiter, and I think he has less, I'll say, academic hindrances than Fitzgerald has at Northwestern. Not that Rutgers doesn't view themselves as a little bit of an ivory tower academic institution, but it's a different school. So don't pew-pew Rutgers too fast here. I get it. They're not great, but it wasn't a horrible win for Illinois either. When I saw that happen, and I saw it happen with a backup quarterback, I kind of started worrying a little bit. And Lovie Smith, keep in mind too, he finished out the latter half of last year with Illinois playing some very good football. I mean, it's not like Illinois came into this season on this continuous downward slide that they had been on in previous years. They had a bit, by Lovie Smith at Illinois standards, the latter half of last season was a pretty solid season. They had a big upset over Wisconsin. They were playing solid football for a good chunk of last year. I'm not sure why everybody suddenly forgot about that.
I mean,
I'm not saying they're a great team by any means, but I don't – this wasn't – Nebraska getting trucked like they did was a little surprising. Nebraska losing in and of itself was not surprising to me, at least.
Now, a lot of the feedback will come, yes, 5 turnovers. The officiating may not have been ideal. But that still doesn't change the fact that Illinois went for 490 yards of total offense. It ran for 285. It was 11 of 17 on third down. It was 1 of 1 on fourth down, and it had the ball 36 minutes.
Yeah, officiating wasn't great, but to be honest, Big Ten officiating might be some of the weakest I've seen out there. I don't know what the reason is, and I felt that for years.
And you guys had Ed O'Neill over the weekend too, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. That's the crazy thing. That's usually the stronger crew. It was not the strongest officiating game, but to be clear and honest, Nebraska did not lose the game because of horrible officiating. I mean, Nebraska lost the game because they didn't play well. They had a lot of penalties. They had a whole bunch of turnovers. Okay, fine. That very first turnover of the game, go ahead, give that back to Nebraska. do you think Nebraska still wins that game getting that one turnover back? I mean, the answer is absolutely not. Nebraska played like crap the whole game, start to finish. So it's, you can make a big deal out of the officiating. It's all the other problems are the reason Nebraska lost that game. And there, and it's this multitude of reasons that Nebraska lost the game in the fashion in which they did.
All right, so I was texting you this during the game, and let's go back to the Husker Doc Talk podcast, I believe, in 2018, when Scott Frost was hired. The state was ecstatic, and I think the first thing I said to you was, hey, you know what? Great hire, but I don't like the fact that he's bringing everybody from Central Florida. I don't like that idea. And there's a reason Florida said, yeah, you don't get to bring everybody. Now, after Scott's going to have to start taking a good hard look at who he's surrounded himself with, and that starts with his defensive coordinator, Rob. It really does. And I know you're like, well, he's an Iowa guy. That doesn't make him a great coach. This defense isn't very good.
No, and I, you know what, I've always had questions about Chenander, and I, you know what, he might be one of the few guys on that staff that I actually have not met. I don't know the guy at all. There were occasional things they did that were really good that I liked, but it has been, I mean, you look back at his time at Central Florida, he's always been kind of this, I hate the bend but don't break, because bend but don't break means you give up a bunch of yards, but you keep teams from scoring on you. He bent and kind of broke a fair amount. I mean, it's not like those Central Florida teams won games by 5 touchdown margins. I mean, it was always 42-31 wins. I mean, it was they always gave up a lot of yardage and a lot of points. And you hope to God you got a couple of special team scores, and you hope the offense out managed to punch in a couple more touchdowns than the opponent did, because it's not like the defense, they'd get big plays, they would get tackles for loss, they would get sacks, they would get turnovers, but it doesn't change the fact that those defenses at Central Florida still gave up a lot of points and a lot of yardage. So it is a question that's worth asking. I mean, there's things I like. I love Travis Fisher's recruiting. I love Tuioti's coaching on the defensive line. I think there is some good things going on there. I think he's got some good young players in Ty Robinson and Casey Rogers that can seriously do some damage. Schematically, it's not my favorite, especially in the Big Ten. I mean, you look at the Big Ten, and I mean, if you can't be a strong, hardcore run stopper, you're going to have some problems in this conference.
Big time.
And a defense that, I mean, just from a 3-4 to a 4-3, you got a defense that with a 3-4, you're going to put 3 D linemen out there. If you're a 4-3, you're putting 4 D linemen out there. If I've got a matchup against a power running team, I want 4 D linemen out there. I just do. I mean, that's the nature of it. And so, yeah, I do kind of question schematically how that matches up. Now, here's the other thing. I think if it's pass rush, if it's bringing blitzes, I think the 4-3 is a little more suited to that. Nebraska switched to the 4-3 in the early 90s because they felt like they could get a better pass rush. They felt like they could get more speed on the field, and it was almost sort of this stumble into the fact that, oh, this thing works well against the run, too. We're just going to go with this from 92 onward. So I've always kind of wondered, unless you're, oh boy, I mean, unless you're somebody like Dom Capers and you're running the Blitzburg defense, you got to be really, really good at coordinating a 3-4 to know how to use it. And 9 times out of 10, you've got to be able to bring blitzes almost every play. You got to bring an extra guy almost every play on both run and pass downs for that defense to be effective, and that's not something Shenander does. I'm not sure he knows. I hate saying he knows how to use it, but that's kind of, I guess, my criticism is that to have it be a really effective defense, it's got to be kind of, you've got to be a genius with it. I mean, you've got to be a Dom Capers. I'm blanking on who the D coordinator was with the Buffalo Bills in the 1990s. But, I mean, they had Bruce Smith and that whole crew of guys, Daryl Talley, et cetera, Chris Spielman running that defense. I mean, that was, yeah, you had a bunch of all-pro guys year in and year out. That made it pretty good. You just don't see a lot of teams running the defense because for it to be effective, you really got to have sort of a kind of next-level understanding of how to use it and how to use personnel.
Were you thinking of Walt Corey?
What's that?
Were you thinking of Walt Corey, the defensive coordinator for the defensive Bills? He was with Marv Levy in Kansas City and went on to be the defensive coordinator with Levy with the Bills as well.
Yeah, and that's the kind of guy you got to have to run this defense, and that's not Shenander. It's just not. And, I mean, I'm going back and I'm trying to remember. If I'm not mistaken, I thought Bob Diaco ran a 3-4 as well. And it's the exact same kind of thing that it's just, I don't know if Shenander has the kind of that next level understanding of how to make it work effectively. I actually do kind of think Diaco did. His problem is that Diaco was, again, he was Einstein trying to teach like graduate level physics to a bunch of fourth graders. Now, and I say that, I don't mean that in the sense that I'm denigrating the Nebraska guys that they're stupid. I'm just saying he thought on a level in terms of how to do this that was so ungodly complex. There's no way maybe even basic NFL guys would understand the conceptualization of how Diaco wanted to use the 3-4. So if you can't bring it down to the level of the guys you got, it's not going to work.
So I do want to make a correction of what I said earlier in the podcast. It was John O'Neill who was the referee, not Ed O'Neill. Ed O'Neill was on Married with Children and ran for 4 touchdowns in a game in his high school career. It's John O'Neill. But I also noticed that Kyle DeBuse was the side judge on the game. Kyle's an Omaha kid. Actually went to Avoca High School in Avoca, Iowa. Him and I competed in high school against each other, and I can tell you that he was a much better athlete than I was. Rob, can you believe that? We were both quarterbacks. We were both pitchers. He went on to have a nice college career and is now a college football ref. I'm doing a podcast, so that shows you where the both of us have gone. So
he can still run.
He's the side judge, right? But okay, so am I wrong in thinking, and just for the fact that you apathy is now set in, right? I thought it was going to go away after the Penn State win. Apathy from fans is freaking high right now. You got to make changes.
I don't know if apathy is the right word. I think people are pissed. I mean, that's the opposite of apathy.
Yeah.
People do care, and they are not happy. And I think they're not happy because they thought this was one of those games that I think people thought, okay, the hard four ones are behind us. We're going to get Illinois. We're going to even it up. The record's going to be 2-2. Let's see what we can do against Iowa. And now the problem is now all of a sudden you're realizing, oh, shit, Nebraska's still out there. We had a ton of penalties. We had several really untimely turnovers. And we're back to the exact same issues that have plagued us literally since Mike Riley hit the door. I mean, these are the exact same problems we've been battling going on 6 seasons now.
So,
and guess who's coming to town? An Iowa team that seems like it's sort of kind of figured itself out, and that's a dangerous animal to have to match up against.
Well, and so let me ask you this, and this we'll start with the defensive side of the ball because that's where we're at. But I think the key word for today's podcast is identity. and or in Nebraska's case, lack thereof. Now, when we get into talking about Iowa, I can talk to you a lot about Iowa because you know that I follow Iowa. I host the Iowa call-in show after the games. But let's talk about identity because right now, defensively, what is the identity of Nebraska?
They don't have one. And I mean, I'd love to say it's these guys are going to stand in there, slug it out, and be a bunch of hardcore run stoppers. The problem is that they don't have that ability, and I think a lot of it has to do with the defensive front they're running. It's just the 3-4 is not a great Big Ten defense. It would not be a great, it would not be a very good SEC defense. I think it'd be at a very okay ACC defense. I think it might work in the Pac-12. It's designed to be sort of this pass blitz defense. It's kind of what it's designed for, but it doesn't have that load up front with the 4D linemen, and I think that's something that just works better in this league. And we're just not doing that right now. And I find that incredibly bothersome. I'd almost rather see sort of the old Bears defense that Chicago ran in the NFL back in the mid-80s. University of Washington, which, again, I get it, they're a Pac-10 school, but they kind of played like a Big Ten or SEC school back there in the early 90s with Don James, where you have a true nose guard, and then you've got a second and third D lineman lined up over each offensive guard, and then you've got essentially a fourth and a fifth D lineman lined up outside the offensive tackles. It's basically a five-man front. Brutally hard defense to run against. And right now, I almost think that's what Nebraska is going to need if they're going to shut down the run, is to put five down linemen out there. It's just, they just haven't shown an ability to consistently stop the run. And here's the weird thing. The one game where they did was Ohio State. I mean, yeah. you look at it since then, and they really haven't. That Penn State game. Penn State had a lot of yardage on the ground. You know what? The Northwestern game, they actually did okay. I mean, when they got hurt versus Northwestern, unfortunately, it did happen to be the run game as well as quarterback scrambles. But it's Nebraska just – I think they've got the personnel to do it. I just think I think the scheme is a massive weakness for this team right now.
Well, and now you got Iowa up next, and the Hawks, let's be honest, ever since a dismal showing against Northwestern, and what I mean by that is they only ran the ball 23 times, only gave the ball 18 times to their premier backs, which cost Iowa the game because they threw the ball 50 times against Northwestern, which was stupid. But you've got Iowa now that has won three straight games, and they've done it with running the football. And Iowa, whether you like their football team or not, whether you like the way they play, they have an identity, right? There is a offensively, Iowa has an identity, and it starts with, you know, their offensive line, and now with Tyler Goodson and Mekhi Sargent, they've got a pretty darn good running game, and the rest of their skilled players aren't bad either.
And that's one of those things where when you look at Iowa, when they stick to their identity, they do well.
Yes.
Right now, Iowa could be a top 20 team. If they had beaten Northwestern, they're what, 3-1 at that point or 4-1?
Well, if they'd beaten Northwestern, they would be 4-1 right now. They're 5 points away from being 5-0.
Okay, so you've got a team that is near, like you just said, almost 5-0. If they stick to their identity, they're 4-1 and they're a top 25 team right now.
Yes.
Instead, they're 3-2 and kind of on the cusp. But that's the whole thing about having that identity, having that ability, embracing it and living by it. And Iowa is such a great example where we could point to that and say, hey, you know what? If they had put the ball in the running back's hand literally 50 times that day, they win that game against Northwestern.
Yes.
And it's, I mean, it's, I hate saying it, it's as simple as that, but it's obviously as simple as that. And you sit there and ask, well, how come million-dollar football coaches can't figure it out? It's like, well, crap, sometimes in the moment sometimes you don't see the forest for the trees. I look at Nebraska, and there is not an identity. And even on offense, there's not an identity. But we haven't quite got there yet. But, yeah, the defense, there's no identity. I think they've got the personnel to be a pretty solid defense right now. And I think they're only going to get better. But I think running a 3-4 scheme is killing them. Yeah, I think it's absolutely killing them in this league.
Okay, I'm going to ask you an honest question because I'm the devil's advocate. What makes you think they're going to get better? If they don't have an identity now, and they really haven't had an identity since Scott Frost arrived in Lincoln, what makes you think they're going to have an identity coming up?
And that's a huge worry of mine because I don't have an answer for that, and that's a bad thing. I hate to say it. I think we need a change at defensive coordinator. We need somebody who's going to come in and bring a 4-3 defense and isn't going to be afraid to stack the box and stop the run. And right now we just don't have the guy to do that. I worried a bit about it when Frost got hired with Chenander. I mean, there was kind of these little snippets you could point to where you could see like, well, hey, look here, he did this little thing over here that was really good, and over here there was another little thing. And I even had myself talked into this where I had this multitude of like, oh geez, that's not a great collection of examples here of this being a great defense. But I mean, here's like one or two or three little exceptions that I hope prove the rule that maybe he is a good D coordinator. And it's one of those, it doesn't work that way in football. Guys tend to be pretty consistent. If you're going to give up a lot of points and a lot of yardage one place, you're going to be somebody who gives up a lot of points and yardage some other place too. I hate to say it. It's just, you just don't see it getting done.
Yeah, and sometimes, and I get the friendship, right? And that's the hardest part about hiring your friends and bringing guys in you like working with, is that when it does come time to make a change, it's hard, right? It's like,
oh, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. But you know, when you're a CEO, when you're the head coach of a program, your job is to win football games and develop talent. And right now, Scott Frost isn't winning football games. And I don't care what you're saying, they're not developing talent right now either.
Well, I mean, I am seeing some development. It's just like I said, though, the thing that's disappointing is that, in my opinion, the basic scheme is not a good scheme to run in this league. I mean, it's like coming into the Big Ten and you want to run, but like truly like the Mouse Davis running shoe, it's just not going to work. Well, that really didn't work anywhere for very long, truth be told. But I mean, that's my point, is there's certain things that are going to work and certain things that aren't based upon what you're matched up against week in and week out. And in the Big Ten, in the SEC, you've got to be able to stop the run, and that's not something – the 3-4 is just not a great defense for that.
All right, so you brought up the offense, and again, let's bring up the word identity. Scott Frost was known for his offensive prowess at Central Florida. He comes to the Big Ten, basically says, you know what, Big Ten teams are going to have to adapt to what he does. That's not the case, my friend, and this team has zero identity on offense.
Yeah, and I think if Frost and Nebraska had the personnel and weapons they needed, I think things, I'm not saying they'd be great, but I think things would be better. Again, I keep going back to this where, I mean, a lot of people have commented on this the last 2 weeks. Nebraska's run game is the quarterback keeping the ball and running.
Yeah, I made when I was doing the Iowa postgame show yesterday, we were talking about Nebraska. I said Nebraska is one-dimensional. And I said they're one-dimensional running. They're a one-dimensional running team, and they're a one-dimensional inside that, and the quarterback keeps the football.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that is a bad, bad thing. Because I mean, I think I texted you at one point. If Nebraska, I mean, if you can stop Nebraska's quarterback run game, that offense is dead in the water. I mean, they have not developed a passing game. I'm a little disappointed in the usage of some of these younger wide receivers, Fleming, Xavier Betts. I want to see those guys get into the game more. I do think they've tried to take the load a little bit off Wandale Robinson, but I think they need to put it back on him. But they, you know what, when I look at McCaffrey, he doesn't, I think he's got a better arm than Martinez. I think he's a little bit of a better runner than Martinez. I don't think he sees the field as well. There were multiple times throughout the course of the game where I saw huge gains and potential touchdowns left out there because he just didn't identify an open receiver. I feel bad because I'm sitting here going, okay, Frost's offense is working in the sense that it's getting guys open downfield, but we've yet to have a quarterback that can see it or get the ball to those guys.
So do you think Luke McCaffrey starts against Iowa? Adrian Martinez comes in late in the game yesterday, goes 7 plays, 54 yards, has a touchdown pass. Are we back to is Nebraska back to a quarterback controversy?
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I don't know who they start. I don't have a good answer for you there. I think in overall productivity, Luke has done well. And I think when you look at this coaching staff's tendencies, it seems like their logic has been that if they got somebody who seems like they're pretty good, they just need more time and are going to need the ability to develop into their role. They kind of stick with them. And again, Cam Jurgens is an example of that thinking or that mentality where you've got a guy where, all right, he's just spraying snaps all over the place. But on the flip side, he's a really explosive blocker. Well, those explosive blocks are great, but they don't help you when the ball is shooting over the quarterback's head and landing 15 yards behind the quarterback. But yet they stuck with him. And so I kind of wonder, it would not surprise me if McCaffrey's the quarterback against Iowa. It would not surprise me if Martinez comes out there either.
Well,
so
both of them have to be careful throwing the football. Iowa, Rob, has had more interceptions than any team in the country since 2017. They had 2 more picks yesterday. That gives them 10 on the season. They are second in the Big Ten behind Indiana in interceptions. They're ball hawks, man, and there's an identity on that defense too. They held Penn State to, 62 yards rushing yesterday.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's not like Nebraska is sitting here threatening anybody with a really strong, I was going to say running game in general, but especially it's not like you really got to worry about Mills or Scott or anybody else ripping a new one from the running back position for Nebraska. It's just, they're not a running team. This is a quarterback-based offense with a couple of pretty good but maybe not great quarterbacks, and neither one of which is a great throwing quarterback. So you're kind of back to this situation, especially where you look at the last couple of years where we've talked at length, ad nauseum, about the fact that Nebraska doesn't have a deep threat at wide receiver. Nebraska doesn't have a true, really good every down running back. You've removed a lot of pressure off of defenses because they don't have to worry so much about that deep threat, consistently getting burned long. They don't have to worry about Nebraska lining up and just pounding the rock down their throats play after play after play. You got to do a pretty good job of stopping the running back. You got to do a pretty good job of stopping the deep ball. Keep an eye on Wandale. And after that, go kill the quarterback. You basically got one thing you got to worry about. And if you can shut that down, again, like I said, it's an offense that's dead in the water.
So you and I have done.
And that's scary when I think about Iowa, when you got a team that is going to be more physical than Nebraska, because they always have been. And it's hitting their Iowa is hitting their stride right now. They've kind of found that identity. They've kind of cleaned up the mistakes. Their quarterback play has stabilized tremendously since that first game of the year.
Spencer Petras is playing better. I thought his best drive yesterday as a starter when Iowa got the ball back with, I think it was 53 seconds to go in the half, and marched Iowa down the field for a touchdown. I thought that was a huge confidence booster for him, and it was.
And I mean, he's what, a redshirt sophomore?
Yeah, redshirt sophomore, and he'd only taken
one. It's not like, I mean, it's not like you're expecting him to be like Beathard or Nate Stanley were as juniors or seniors, yeah. And I totally get that. But I mean, he's settling into that position, and like I said, Iowa's found that run game. They've the skill guys. You look at those wide receivers are kind of making plays now, and even more comforting for a guy like Petras is he's got to know at this point they can rely on the defense a little bit. And again, you take that pressure off of a quarterback, it makes everything better. So I'm really worried where the last couple of years Nebraska's had these kind of pretty close games against Iowa.
Yeah, that's why
right now it's like I'm really worried right now because I think Nebraska's offense has regressed, at least from a schematic standpoint, from even last year where I thought they could do some damage in the running back run game. And this year, it's just we've got nothing. It's truly, like I said, if you can figure out how to stop just the quarterback in Nebraska's offense, you've won the game.
And that's what I was going to ask you. I think we've done this every year since we've done the podcast, and it drives people nuts because I know what the answer is here. But I'm going to ask you again, as we get ready for the Heroes game, as we get ready for this newfound rivalry between Iowa and Nebraska, is there any position group right now where Nebraska has the edge over Iowa? And I'm going to give you my answer. The answer is no.
Oh, boy.
It's not running back.
That's a painful pause. I think defensive line, I truly think Nebraska's got the personnel to do some damage, and they're just not using it. I mean personnel,
yeah.
I'm talking about just pure talent that's available to use. I think Nebraska's better. Again, they're just not using it though. So they're not going to be on the field in the numbers and in the scheme that they need to be in order for it to be effective.
Keep an eye on. So I want you to keep an eye on this guy, Davion Nixon. He's number 54. He's a left tackle for Iowa. He had a 71-yard interception return for a touchdown yesterday. Keep an eye on a guy like Chauncey Golston. Fast dude.
Golston's good.
Zach Von Valkenburg. With a name like that, hell, you know he's going to be a beast, right? I mean,
a Viking.
Yeah, I mean,
going to be running in there.
The talent may be there, but Nebraska's not in sync like the Iowa offensive line or defensive line is. And that's the difference. There's an identity there. They're ball hawks where they come up with interceptions, they force turnovers, and they stop the run. And that's why.
Well, here's a question for you.
Okay.
Because I actually do think this has happened the last couple of years, is that Scott Frost in Nebraska can outthink Kirk and Brian Ferentz to a degree.
I don't disagree with you on that, and that's why these games have been somewhat closer than maybe they should be.
Yeah, the last 2 years, these games have been amazingly close, almost to the point of, I mean, 2018, it's almost surprising. Nebraska almost knocked off Iowa. Iowa had, Hawkinson had that catch for a first down.
Yep.
That put him in field goal range and allowed him to win the ball, win the game with a field goal in 2018. 2019, I think Iowa took their foot off the gas and Nebraska came back and nearly pulled it out on the last drive of the game. You know, I mean, if there's a position group or if there's a group where Nebraska's got the edge, I do think that you can outthink the Ferentz family. And if Nebraska's remotely got an edge, that's it. I just, this year, I think they're in a situation where they don't have, they literally do not have the personnel or the ability to keep the game close or to be able to do what they need to do to beat Iowa. And that's run the ball, keep the ball out of Iowa's hands, and to be able to stop a halfway solid run game. Those are things that this Nebraska team just does not have the ability to do.
You know, I'm happy this game is on Black Friday. Remember, originally it wasn't supposed to be a Black Friday game because Sean Eichhorst ended that. But I think when it comes to Black Friday, I think Iowa and Nebraska is the perfect fit. I think next year they're off, but then they're going to renew it. I like this being the Black Friday game.
I like it because let's get this ass whooping out of the way so I can enjoy the rest of the weekend. Is that bad?
Are you conceding this? Are you just conceding already?
I think to a degree the Nebraska players, as much as up front there was that desire to want to play football this year, and as much as these guys needed to get out there playing football in terms of the overall experience and being able to get just that on-field time, and there's still value in that. I think once they played that Ohio State game and realized, oh, we've got there's no chance we're winning a division this year. We're going to play the games, we're going to get our experience, and then we're going to go home because you know it's 2020 COVID season and nobody gives a rat's ass anyway. I truly wonder if guys have kind of cashed it in after that first game.
That's bad coaching if that's the case. That's bad coaching.
It is. And the Penn State game I appreciate, but I think Penn State's done it maybe even more so than Nebraska has. And I think Penn State's a good team. I think Penn State, I don't know if they were, what were they ranked coming in? I mean, it was weirdly high, like 7th, 8th, 9th of the country. I'm not sure they're a top 10 team from a talent standpoint, but I do think Penn State's a top 25 team, and I think they've got an incredibly good set of personnel on the offensive and defensive lines. I think they've got the ability to run the ball. I think they've got a couple of actually halfway decent quarterbacks. They just haven't figured out how to put it together yet, which I guess kind of falls on coaching for them. But I'm surprised we beat Penn State. Nebraska's second half against Penn State is more indicative of this Nebraska team than Nebraska's first half against Penn State.
I think that makes sense, and it'll be interesting. I'd like Iowa to win this game, of course, because being the Iowa fan on this show, but just because Iowa's got better personnel. But nothing surprises me anymore, and I go off, you know, the last couple of games these two teams have played, they've been good contests. There's a little bit of pride on the line. There's something to be played for. I'm expecting a good game. And do you think it makes any difference having no fans in the stands? And speaking of no fans in the stands, did you watch Bedlam at all last night? Shit.
I did.
How many fucking people were at the Oklahoma game last night?
Well, There's going to be a lot of COVID running around.
Holy
shit.
Next few weeks. We were sitting in the studio. I was in the WHO studios. We're watching this game going, that's not the intention of social distancing by any means.
Yeah, that looks like they basically just, I mean, obviously they didn't open up the gates to everybody, but I mean, that's essentially every other seat in that stadium had somebody in it.
It was unbelievable. But let's go to the Big Ten. Let's go to the Big Ten. I mean, does it play a difference?
Initially, I think it's something guys got to get over. I mean, from a mental standpoint, playing a game, I think that's tough. I mean, we played a lot of road games when I was in college where there just weren't people there. I mean, it's not like you went to Kansas and played in front of a big crowd. You went to Kansas and you had maybe 15,000 KU fans there, tops. And then you had like 18,000 Husker fans that drove down. I mean, the Nebraska fans outdid it, but I mean, it was still, you had maybe 30,000 people. So it was not many people. Same thing, Oklahoma State on a down year. I played games where you didn't have a lot of people there. And so I guess I kind of get that in the sense that you still go out and you just, there's so much, at least we had so much focus on what we were doing on the field that I'm not sure it mattered that much. Maybe for these guys it does, because it's obvious that focus may not be there when you look at the results. But I think it makes a difference that first game or two. After that, if that's still the problem, then you've got way bigger issues than people in the stands.
Hey, so I got a question.
Once you get a couple games in, it shouldn't matter.
So I got a question for you. I was talking about this on the show with Iowa yesterday. You know, Iowa beat Penn State. Fans were happy because they beat Penn State. It was the first win over Penn State since 2010. Penn State had won six in a row. Of course, given the nature of what Penn State's been the last couple of years, it still feels good. And I made this analogy. Even though Penn State was winless coming into the game, they still had that respect of being Penn State, right? And I remember Nebraska had that for a good number of years. I don't think it has it anymore. When do you think Nebraska lost that?
No, not at all.
No, but when do you think they lost that mystique of, hey, a team beat Nebraska and there was great pride in that? Was that around 08, 09? When do you think it was?
I think it happened during the Pelini era.
Okay. So it actually went later than most people would think.
I think it was kind of this low-key, it was a little low-key. I mean, I think it was actually almost kind of later in the Pelini era. I mean, I think it was more sort of like 14, 15, 13, 14, okay. 15, kind of in that time frame there. Well, I mean, at that point, I guess, that was actually when Riley came in. So, I mean, it was probably 12, 13 or so is my guess. And I think a lot of it was one of these things where people just kind of came to the realization, hey, these guys are still winning games. They're still winning 9 games a year. But it's not like you're going to knock off Ohio State. It's not like you're going to beat Wisconsin. It's not like you're going to beat, those were kind of the two big thorns on your side, really. But it wasn't a situation where people were, okay, they're going to win the Big Ten West and go to the title game and seriously contend. Well, like all of a sudden when that was gone, I think that mystique changed.
Okay. That makes sense.
It was the fact that you didn't have to worry about, I mean, could you lose to Nebraska? Yeah. But when you talk about mystique, you talk about it in the sense of, is this a team that can win championships? And the last championship, now I'm not talking about division championships where it's you win the Big 12 North or you win the Big 10 West. I'm not, in my mind, that's not a championship. That means you're guaranteed second place is all that's got you. So the last time Nebraska's won a championship was 1999 when they won the Big 12. That's, I mean, literally, it's been 21 years since Nebraska has won a championship. And so you haven't had to worry about Nebraska in that sense that, hey, is this a team that's going to win a championship? And when you lose, when that answer becomes no, the mystique's gone.
Well, hell, if that's the answer, then the answer is really 2004.
Well, probably.
Yeah, you're still holding on.
Callahan and Pelini both had teams that made it to the conference title.
They did.
I mean, they made it there. And so, I mean, you kind of had those little flashes that, hey, if we win this, I mean, you think about like 2010. I thought Pelini, when he came in, so 08 was his first year, hugely optimistic year. They knocked off Dabo Sweeney and Clemson in the Gator Bowl. They had the Gator Bowl win over Georgia that was like, hey, you know what, maybe we'll be okay. They had that 2010 team that just, the defense just brutalized teams. And again, you're like, hey, you know what, maybe we're going to be okay. We got robbed at Texas in the Big 12 title game. You know what, maybe we're going to be okay. Maybe this is, we're on the right path, and we're going to get that mystique back. And it just, when it became, you go 2-3 years after that, and you realize it's like, boy, we haven't won that championship. We haven't gotten to that next level. And when you don't do that for so long, that mystique's gone. And so like I said, it's like, hey, can Nebraska sneak a win in over you? Yeah, absolutely, they can. Are they going to consistently beat you year in and year out? Well, unless you're Michigan State, probably not. but it's just they're not somebody that you got to worry about in the sense of, hey, we're going to beat Kansas every year. We're going to beat K-State every year. We're going to beat Iowa State almost every year. We're going to beat Colorado almost every year. We're going to beat Oklahoma State every year. That's just not there anymore. You're not the big dog on the block by any means whatsoever.
Speaking of big dog on the block, I do need to say congratulations. You are the father of a state champion. Omaha Westside beat Elkhorn South for the Class A state title in the state of Nebraska. And your son Ryan was a player. Congratulations, state championship dad.
Thank you. No, that was... I'm still kind of riding cloud nine on that one a little bit as a parent. So
enjoy it, man.
It was a great game. They had a great season, finished 12-0, which, you know what, you had a couple of really, really good teams here in the Omaha area between Elkhorn South and Westside. You know, kudos to both teams, parents, coaching staffs, just to negotiate the whole COVID thing and get these teams literally from a game one all the way through a state title game without losing a game due to quarantine, et cetera. I mean, the amount of work and effort it took behind the scenes for everything from school administration down through the kids themselves to get that done is absolutely amazing in my mind. I go back to late summer where I always thought, man, if we could get half of the season in, if we could get 4, 5, maybe 6 games in before COVID shuts all of this down, I'll be ecstatic. And so the fact we got to that point was, I think, truly amazing in and of itself, especially when you look at Omaha public schools. Like a lot of school districts around the country just kind of said screw it from the get-go and didn't even bother having a season.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
So... yeah, it was great, great, you know, a great group of athletes, great group of coaches. It was interesting. Between the two schools, you got just a slew of Division I college guys coming out of both schools. You got Avante Dickerson going to Minnesota. I'm still hoping he changes his mind. Kobe Bretz and Teddy Prochaska going to Nebraska. Cade Hoberman. Oh, I'm blanking on the kid's name. There's a linebacker from Alcorn South. The two of them are going to Northern Illinois. So you got arguably the best player on the field Friday night for Omaha Westside was Westside's quarterback, Cole Payton, who's just beast of a football player, accounted for 5 touchdowns and is going to North Dakota State. And a lot of the reason he's going to North Dakota State is because he's got quote-unquote better offers. But he's looking at North Dakota State, whose last 2 quarterbacks are currently in the NFL, and he's thinking, I'm going to go to North Dakota State, start for 3 years, win a couple of national championships, and then I'm going to go to the NFL. And it's going to be a great fit. He's going to absolutely tear it up there.
This sounds like a really weird question, and I don't know the answer to it, because Division I AA, or FCS as it's known now, is going to play a spring competition. Of course, North Dakota State's quarterback has decided they played 1 game this year, and he's going to enter the draft. Could he go? Can he graduate and then go try to play? Because he gets a free year, too. He could actually go play in the spring, get a free year, and still have 4 years of eligibility left.
Wow, that's actually a really good question. I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure I've got a good answer for you. But that's one of those things that I think truly actually could play out that way.
I mean, he could graduate in December, get up to North Dakota State, start practice. You get a free year. You get a pass. You could play and still have 4 years of eligibility starting in the fall.
You just, like, blew my mind asking that question.
And I've never blown your mind over anything.
In truth, I'm not sure that I don't know if it'll happen. And the only reason I say that is because when I look at him, one of the other sports that he plays that he's really, really good at, baseball. He's an amazing, amazing baseball player. And I think one of the goals he's going to have is to try and play out his senior year of baseball for Omaha Westside. They kind of lost that this past spring with COVID. They didn't get the true high school season. They played the Legion Ball, which for people outside of Nebraska, I mean, Legion Ball is in a lot of states, but it's basically the club season. So he played Legion Ball during the summer, where Omaha Westside ended up finishing, I believe, 2nd in the state behind Creighton. You're going to love this, behind Creighton Prep's baseball club baseball team.
Westside and Prep are traditionally the 2 best baseball teams in the state of Nebraska. So
they've got some great ones, and there's some other great baseball teams out there. But that's one of those things where I could see maybe him sticking around. That would be the big reason he'd stick, or if he sticks around, that's going to be the big reason why, is to play baseball. But yeah, it's, you know what, we could do an entire show on this whole COVID thing with the eligibility, what's going to work for these guys in terms of, hey, do you go ahead and roll early? I mean, it's something I've discussed with my brother a little bit. We've talked about the show. My nephew Isaac, so my son Ryan and my nephew Isaac had to go toe to toe for about 2/3 of the snaps on defense Friday night. They play on the 2 teams that were in the state title game. The question came up, hey, what if Nebraska offers Isaac a preferred walk-on spot and they work out some kind of deal like they did with Isaac Gifford, the gray shirt, where you walk on for a semester and then go on scholarship the following fall? And well, how would that impact eligibility? And it's, there's so many questions there in terms of how that works. If a kid does decide to enroll early this spring, could they play in the spring if you do a spring season like you were talking about? Now at Nebraska, obviously that's not the case, but for a guy like Cole Payton going up to North Dakota State, where that league and that conference are going to play this spring, how would that work out? And Well, you know what? There's an absolute like that. That's a whole rabbit hole you just opened.
Yeah, hell, I brought it up, and we've already gone like 5 minutes on it. So we've gone down that rabbit hole a little bit. Hey, I talked to Dave Remington just via text. If you go to RemingtonTrophy.com, that's RemingtonTrophy.com. They still haven't made up their mind on the Remington Trophy presentation. I can tell you it's coming soon, okay? So, of course, COVID has thrown a wrench into a lot of things. Expect an announcement coming soon from the Remington Trophy regarding their January 18th celebration, which is the Remington Trophy presentation. Dave will make that announcement, and I believe it's going to be coming any day now. So keep your eyes out for that.
I got my fingers crossed because it's such a great event.
It is a wonderful event. If you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, please do so at Doc Talk Sports. He's crossed 5,000 followers now. That's how popular of a guy he is. And he's a regular.
I think we picked up about 100. Picked up a couple hundred just yesterday alone.
Oh, man. So that's awesome. It keeps growing, and it's your way to communicate, and people can ask you questions, which is really cool. But it's at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. If, you know, all year long, this has been the COVID podcast as well, because Dr. Rob's usually in the studio with me because of some exposure that I've had. He's now at home because I didn't want to risk Dr. Rob getting the Rona. But, you know, it's also affected our other sponsors. And, you know, we're just having fun this year, right? So, of course, the Remington Trophy. But don't forget about Ticket Express. For your holiday gifts, for your stocking stuffers, you can get Nebraska season tickets for 2021. Make sure to get those at TicketExpress.com. If you're looking for something tangible you can actually, like, put your fingers on, go visit Scotty at Husker Hounds. I'm telling you, he won't disappoint. He's got a bunch of stuff you can put under the tree if you want to wear some big red gear. And, of course, drink Infusion Brewing Company beer because, well, we like beer, and beer tastes really good. So make sure to...
Few things help you get through a pandemic better than alcohol.
That's true. I believe there will be a lot of alcoholics that come out of this, though. You know that, right? I mean, the drink.
Oh, my God, it's going to be nuts.
Yeah, the 12-step programs are going to pick up quite a bit. That's for sure. Please take a moment to like this podcast on whatever stream you're listening to on. Of course, we're on Podbean, we're on Apple, we are on Spotify, we're on iHeart, we're on Google Podcasts. Give us a like. Also, give us a review if you get a moment or two to do so. It's the Thanksgiving showdown. It's the Black Friday showdown. It's the Heroes game. It's Rob's Huskers against my Hawkeyes. We'll be back next week to talk about how the game went and talk about the remainder of the season as well. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.